okay, I struggle with that one all the time. Just keep coming back.
Call me John Stone.
It's unfortunately that I don't have a nickname, and I don't call, what do you call me? Vanetta, you know, just keep trying and you'll get it. Exactly. Let's have a moment of silence so that I can get in touch with the God of my understanding and try to share a message of hope this afternoon. Once again, my name is Vanetta, and I'm an addict. And first, I'd like to thank the Fairness Area Convention Committee for asking me to come share my experience, strength, and hope. They asked me way early on. It was like in the fall or spring or sometime at another function to share, and I said, yeah, you know, because I've learned in this process when asked to share, you need to, you know, try to be available. So I don't mind, you know, coming here and showing up to try to share my experience, strength, and hope. The topic is parenting and recovery, and because they gave it to me so early on, it gave me an opportunity to try to, like, think about the exact nature of what that means to me. And I guess what I wanted to start with is that where I come from and who my parents were. You know, my parents are still married today. They've been married, 43 some odd years or something to that effect. And my dad never hit my mom, never. She used to beat him up. He used to, if he did something wrong, she'd crack him so, he'd go on now, stop. You know, he'd block every, you know, lick that she would try to throw. And I commended him for that, because I ain't never seen a man interact in an angry situation with a woman, and they didn't hit that woman. You know, my mom's sister, where we lived at, it was a three-family house. We lived in the front, and it was upstairs and down, and they lived in the back of us. And my uncle always got drunk, and he wanted to beat the kids, beat my aunt. It was just straight chaos in that household. And one time, he cut her up so bad that she had to go in the hospital, and my mom and dad and us, we kept the kids that she had at that time. She was like 8.5 months pregnant, and so she went to the hospital, and we took care of the kids. And I just commend my parents for what it is that they instilled in me, and coming up and showing me that it doesn't have to be that type of lifestyle. So, you know, in my own home, we didn't experience that. What I saw was a loving and sharing couple that struggled with what it is that they had to offer. I had a brother that was, I'm the baby. It's just me and my brother. It was three of us. He was sick. He was born with a bad heart. So we came from Florida to Rochester so that he can receive care from Strong Hospital. Back then, in the early 60s and whatever, that's when open heart surgery was just like an experiment. So he was one of the first people to get that done. And the operation was a success, but he got hit by a car and died. So in all of that, my parents had a lot of bills and had a lot of struggles and things to try to still take care of me and my brother. And I asked my dad the other day, how is it, because I can't wrap my mind around the fact that you had a child that died and now you got all these bills. How did you manage to maintain a household? So my father shared with me how he would get up and walk to Midtown and get on the back of a truck with some guys that he worked with, because he did construction work, and go to work, get off work. They would put him on the back of that same truck and take him back downtown. He would go into the bathroom, shower up, and get some of the semen off of him and put on some clothes and clean the Midtown Plaza at night. So he pretty much was like working around the clock. So I understand today that they gave me a chance. You know, they made sure that they kept me in like a secluded type of lifestyle where I didn't get to go and spend the night at people's houses and have a boyfriend, and none of that stuff was a part of my story. because from the second grade till I graduated from high school, I went to school in Penfield. So it was get on the bus, go to school, come home. Clean up the house, do your chores, stay in the house till I get home from work. You know, it wasn't no invite no friends over. It wasn't none of that. You know, and I truly believe that even though they gave me that structured environment and everything, I wanted to rebel. Like we were talking about this morning, I can remember, I don't want to be a part of this no more. I don't want to be under the thumb of my mama. You know, she make me mad. You know, I don't want to do what she say do. So I began to rebel. I began to do what I wanted to do. And that's how I wound up in the spiraling impact of active addiction. I had a good job. I worked at the county hospital with my mom, so she would check my time card, make sure I was, you know, all those other chaotic stuff. It's bad enough I got to work. And listen to my own supervisor, and I got you in the wings trying to tell me what to do. This is my job. But I can tell her that to this very day, I have the type of respect for my mom that and my dad that there's some things that you just can't say. But in my mind, heck, I'm 43 years old. I should be able to say fart. I should be able to say that without a problem, without being scrutinized and feeling like I just said a major cuss word, you know? But to speed up what it is that I'm trying to say is that at the age, I never wanted to be anybody's parent. Let me just say that. I ain't never want to be nobody's mama. I was wild and in them streets, and it was always about me. When you came to my house and you had some money, we was going to smoke air dollar. There wasn't nothing to go home to your kids with. There wasn't none of that going, none of that. We're going to smoke it all. And when your money gone, we'll see you later because old Joe is coming through the back door. And we need to smoke his too. So about 30, I got pregnant with my first child with Alvin. And I knew I was pregnant. And there was this boy where we lived at. We called it the bottom. It was like a dead-end street. So, you know, a dead-end street, you know, ain't nothing but negativity going on at the end of the road, right? So we called it the bottom where we lived at. And this kid, I used to use with his mom. And he wasn't a little bitty kid. He was older. But he was all deformed and messed up. His whole face was twisted from undevelopment because his mom used the entire time she was pregnant. I used to see him. I'd be like, oh, my God, please don't let my baby look like that. Please give me an opportunity so that I don't make my baby be messed up. But the inability to stop using, I kept using, and, you know, in spite of what it is, the evidence is right there in front of me. Even though I didn't drink alcohol, I still was smoking. I was trying to rationalize and justify, well, he ain't gonna look like that because I don't drink alcohol, you know. So needless to say, I had him, and he was fine, so I thought. He suffers from ADHD. He's a very bright boy, smart as a whip, computer literate and everything. But he's so high strung, he's all over the map. But I love him in spite of all that it is. You know, and I went to school to visit. There was a problem going on, so I went to school with my parents to see what was going on. And the teacher was saying that he's not plugged in, he's not giving any effort. And all I could do was cry because I, in my spirit and in my heart, I feel like that's my fault, that he ain't got the patience enough to sit still long enough to hear what he need to hear in school. He can do the work. He ain't got a problem with doing the work. It's just he won't stay still to do the work. So, you know, let me back up. My parents took Alvin at 18 months old. He was 18 months. And I thought I was doing a good job as a mother. I thought I was a good mother. I wasn't smoking up all the stamps. I wasn't spending all the wick. You know, I was giving him some stuff, and when Joe did come, he tell me to go get some diapers. I got some Lucy's, you know. So, you know, I rationalized and justified the fact that I was being a good parent until one day I wound up afraid to go to DSS to be recertified, because that's when they created this whole process where you need to be assessed to see if you need help. And I didn't want to tell them people that I'm still a recreational user. So I got cut off, which means that the snowball effect of getting cut off means there's no rent being paid, which means the next step is the eviction. And needless to say, I stayed in that apartment until it was time for the marshals to come to put me out. Because I had so many friends coming by. Joe needed to know where I was going to move, so I had to stay there until he showed up. Because I didn't have a phone for him to call me, you know. So, needless to say, I got evicted. And my parents, they would come and get Alvin, you know, like on a Friday, they'd come and get him and take him to their house and clean him up, wash him up, give him fresh clothes and stuff like that. And pretty soon it turned into not bringing him back to me at all. So I wound up at my cousin's house, and there was a knock early one Sunday morning. I had just laid down about 5:30, and there was a knock. And it's like, cuz, somebody at the door for you. I go downstairs, and it's one of my mom's friends handed me some papers. So I looked at it, and she hugged me. She said, I love you, Vanetta, but your mama told me to bring this to you. And it was court papers. She was taking me to court to take my boy. And I thought that was the most cruelest thing she could do to me, because I was a good mother. I really was, in my mind. And they took Alvin, and I was like, well, you know what? I'll show you. I'm really going to use now. So I was off to the races for the next 3 years. I'm talking about nowhere to live, no welfare. All I had was who I was to peddle my wares to get one more. And I did that for 3 years. I couldn't believe that's what I did. But I had to do what I needed to do to get one more. And I wound up getting pregnant with my daughter. And in that time, in this pregnancy, I literally heard a voice, y'all, say, give that baby a chance. Because I was going to jump off that bridge it's on St. Paul. There's a bridge. And I was living on that side of town. That's a whole other story. But I wound up on a side of town that I never grew up on, didn't know nothing about. But I was able to find all the spots and get one more and navigate that whole process. But instead of jumping off that bridge, I wound up on Clinton Avenue in this manhouse. And he pissed me off. He said something smart to me. You know, you need to do this or you need to do that. And I said to myself, I don't need to do a damn thing. I needed to do one thing, and I did it. I picked up the phone and called my mama. Come get me. Come get me. And they came and got me and took me home and told me, you'll go to church, you'll go to those meetings with your brother. Needless to did they know that that was my link to try to get my life in order. And I never looked back. So I was 3 months pregnant, and I went to a treatment facility, and them people told me that this was a six-month program. And I believed that going in. I did. And then people told me, no, Vanetta, you're going to stay a little longer because you're pregnant and you got that baby in you. You don't know what to do with no child. And they were right. You know, I was able to, long before I really knew what NA was about, God had stepped in and opened me up to hear what it is I needed to hear about being a parent, you know. And they taught me how to get up and get the baby fed and bathed and dressed. And at 6 months, they made me put her in a daycare so that I can go to outpatient and do what I needed to do. And then I had wound up, they said, okay, you need to try to be doing something vocationally. So they sent me to this place called the Rochester Women's Being Project. That's what it was called at the time. And that was my first job I had in 10 years. I was like, where the hell did time go? 10 years? You know how hard it is to try to fill out an application with a 10-year gap? What were you doing? Oh, I was on vacation. Oh, my God. But needless to say, I was so grateful that I was able to stop using and really, really give that baby a chance. And in this facility, what happened was after I had her, my pelvic broke and I couldn't walk. So my expectation was I was going to have my baby, and I'm going to go back to this facility and be in my wonderful mother's room with the crib and the bed and all that stuff. Well, that wasn't the plan from God. They had this room called the chapel, and it had the stained glass church windows, and this is where we came for like a morning prayer and stuff like that. That was my room for about 2 months because I couldn't walk up and down the stairs. I was like, look how God works. He wants to get me by myself to bond with this baby, because I lost the opportunity to bond with that first one. So we're going to do it right this time, Vanetta. We're going to get you to bond and focus on what it is you need to do for this child. And in that whole experience, I was so grateful that they didn't let me leave in 6 months. And I got what I needed to do to be that parent that I needed to be for that baby. And everywhere I go, she's with me. When I came here yesterday, Addie asked me, where that baby at? She with her grandparents, so I can get a message of hope by myself, you know? I mean, I love her. She is all that it is that I live for. You know, if y'all listened to what I didn't say, is that I've never been a product of molestation. I've never, you know, had to experience that. And I don't want to visit that on her. You know what I'm saying? I will give my right arm to make sure that she don't have to experience that. But it's hard. Being a parent is a 24-hour-a-day job. And I'm learning how that, I'm learning how she's six now, and I got to think for me and her, you know, and a part of me expects her to, like, just know some stuff. Based on the fact that I just went to MCC, I took child psychology so that I can figure out the exact nature of what goes on in a child's mind. Based on the book evidence, you should be knowing how to do some stuff. You should know how to tie your shoes at six. You should know how to take a bath without mommy telling you to take a bath. And that's crazy. Between my significant other and my daddy, they keep telling me, she's just a baby, Vanetta. She's still just a child. I beg to differ. She talks so much. She's so intelligent. She's so bright. She talks beyond her 6 years. She speaks to you way beyond her 6 years. So in that, I believe you should be doing some stuff. I work real hard at trying to, you know, just maintain her going to school and maintaining a rapport with her and my parents in school. You know, she's got asthma. Now, in my mind, she's supposed to be a perfect baby. I didn't smoke crack. Yeah, I smoked some cigarettes. So that might have constituted the reason why she got the asthma. I try not to beat myself up. It's hard. On a daily basis, I go back and forth with the emotional feelings of, is it really my fault? What part did I play in all of these afflictions and deficits that my baby's got, you know, as a direct result of me not willing to do what it is that a parent should be doing for that child way before they're born? I'm talking about from the moment of conception, that baby is growing, and everything that you ingest and put in you reflects on them. So she's got asthma, and I work real hard at, you know, I quit smoking because of her. You know, I couldn't figure out why she was always throwing up and always sick and what is really going on. And a doctor told me, you know, she got asthma, Vanetta, and you need to stop smoking. So I did what I needed to do as a parent. I moved down the hallway away from the smoke lounge, and I put my cigarettes down. Haven't had a cigarette in 8 years. And she would tell you, you shouldn't smoke around me, I got asthma. Again, that intuitiveness that this six-year-old carries. She, you know, she just says some things that are just way beyond her 6 years, y'all, I'm telling you. I know that my biggest fear today as her parent and my son's parent is what I'm going to do when they get to be 17, 16, when she starts the cycle of becoming a woman, how am I, you know, I know for me, my plan is to sit her down and do her like my mama did me. Listen, you can make a baby. You better not talk to no boys. And you need to show me how many pads you got in that box every month. We ain't having no mistakes around here. There ain't no room for mistakes. We need to do it right from the gate. And, you know, my mom, she sat me down and literally showed me some stuff in a medical book because she's a nurse. And I'm mad because she threw all that stuff away, so I will probably have to go to the library to get what it is that I need to share with her. But I'm scared, you know, because I was watching a TV program, and this lady talking about her daughter 4 months pregnant, and she didn't know. How in the hell could you not know? What were you doing? I'm going to be watching. I'm going to be watching real close. I mean, I watch her now, but my plan is to watch her really, really close. You know, just try to make sure that I can instill in her some sense of self and self-love and self-worth, that you ain't got to belittle yourself to the point to where you need to be validated by a boy, you know? I try to get her plugged into different activities and stuff to do. There's this program called Dream Seeds, and I've been wanting her to be a part of that for many years, and now she's old enough, she's a part of it, and it's a free program. They teach her how to do tap, African and drum and dance, you know, all of that type of stuff. And I figure at least give her a head start in that area to, like, divert her from any other materialistic, but other things that's outside herself, you know, give her something to validate herself with. I just really work hard at just, you know, trying to meet all of her needs and some of her wants. You know, I felt really bad for the past year and a half that I couldn't send her to Hochstein School of Music where her brother goes, because grandma and grandpa got some money. I ain't got as much money as grandma and grandpa. Nana and Poppy got money to send Alvin to Hochstein. Mommy ain't got that kind of money. You know, so by Dream Seeds, her being old enough to do that, that was a blessing. You know, so now she can be a part of something that he's not a part of, because they're very competitive. I've never seen two children so competitive in my entire life. You know, that sibling rivalry, and I try to, like, stay out of it. You know what I'm saying? Because once I submit a discipline on them two, they'll be back friends again 2 minutes later. And it behooves me how he manipulates her. I mean, I say, can't you see that, Dolores? He's manipulating you. And then I got to remember, but she's only six. So, and he's 10. So he's got a little bit more wisdom over her. He knows how to win her over. And he can't do no wrong. He'll do some wrong and she'll take up for him. I was like, my God. How is that supposed to work? She's only six. What does she know about being nurturing and trying to take up for her big brother? You know, she loves him to death. And this is the part that it hurts me the most. My babies have not experienced or know anything about my active addiction. They don't know mommy was a strumpet that walked the streets, and you seen her at 6 in the morning as well as 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning. They don't know that Finetta. They don't know who she is. And by him living with my parents and she's living with me, those are two separate households with two sets of rules and regulations and dispositions that they have to deal with. And Alvin wants to know why he came live with his mama. At the age of 10, he wants to know. Why, what's going on that I can't live with you? And I don't know how to say, well, mama is an old crackhead. They got to go to meetings and can't use no dope. You are high strung with ADHD and the whole nine, and mommy will lose her mind and probably go get one if you come live with her. But he can't see that. Like I said, they took him at 18 months. So not only do they think there's no problem with mommy, my parents think there's no problem with mommy. Mama gonna always, I'm gonna always be an addict. But I don't have to be that using addict. And all I can do is live a day at a time in this program and utilize the steps and traditions, my sponsor and support network, to keep me clean, to keep me sane, to be there for them. My biggest wish is that one day, that my boy will be under the same roof of me and my baby. You know, because I don't want him to be that boy or that kid or that man one day thinking that his mama never loved him. You know what I'm saying? That he comes from a broken family or, you know, some stuff that will impact him to make wrong choices. You know, a lot of days I would say to myself, boy, he's going to either have a seat in Narcotics Anonymous or a wonderful warm bed in jail. Because he's so headstrong and he's adamant about once his mind is locked and loaded on a fixed idea, you can't stop him. He's going to do it. And he was like, please, can I, please? No, Alvin, no, you can't. He'll leave out of the room, he'll come back, look, mommy, can I please? I said, no, don't you get it? No means no. He has no concept of the word no. He will ask you, and it's like a wearing down effect. It's like he gonna get it, come hell or high water, whatever it is, especially the computer. God forbid you tell him he can't get on the computer, it's going to be a major catastrophe. You know, he's only 10 years old, and he's sharing with me and my mom the, you know, the abbreviations of words. It's GGL. Me and my mom thought it was Go Girl, and but that's not it. It's Good Luck something or whatever. But he told me and my mom the acronym, and like, well, I guess we need to go get an education from your grandson on how to read with the texts that come through on a computer, because he is just way beyond his years. And he doesn't have the intuitiveness to know when nobody wants to be bothered with him, you know. And I feel so bad for my boy. Some kids, he's so smart. We got a letter in the mail to put him in the MAC program. That's like an accelerated class program. So we put him in the MAC program, but nobody liked him. Nobody liked my boy. And they played a dirty trick on him. They stole his passcode for the computer and emailed the little girl a nasty note. And he swore up and down he didn't do it. And they put him, you know, they tried to suspend him from school, and they did all this other stuff, and they refused to want to, like, investigate. But thank God for the parents that I have that's in his life. So we're not going for that. Y'all need to investigate this and figure out the exact nature and come to find out the email didn't even come from our home address. It came from some other address. So that was the only proof that we had. The IT people came into the school and looked on the computer and figured out where the email came from. And they didn't offer an apology. They didn't try to, like, console the situation or anything. So finally, me and my parents, I told Mommy, Alvin doesn't have the social skills to be in the MAP program. Leave him over there at the school that he's at, where he's learning and he's doing well and he's liked by some people. You know what I'm saying? We don't expect to be liked by everybody, but it need to be once somebody that you could be a friend with in school. You know what I'm saying? So they took him out and they put him over back to the school where he was at originally, and we have not gotten out one phone call about Alvin's behavior at school. Not one. Because the teacher that he has a nephew, or her brother or something, had ADHD when they were coming up, so she pretty much expects and knows what to do with these types of children. So he's doing really well in that area. But I know that being a parent comes with a lot of responsibility and a lot of dictating. My significant other told me the other night, he said, she's manipulating you. She asked me to give her a bath at the age of 6. She said, Mommy, ain't you going to wash me up? So I was going to go for that. You know, I'm going to wash my baby up. That's what I'm supposed to do. I'm a mother, right? And he tells me, she's manipulating you. Any other time she goes skippity-doo in the bathroom and give herself a wonderful bath, a shower, whatever it is she wants. And I was like, you know what? Maybe you just might be right. You just might be right about that. So I'm always open-minded to the fact of other people's information towards parenting. I will never close myself off to the gifts of another adult that has some experience, because I'm real new at this. You got to remember, that first one was took at 18 months. They don't come with no script or no directives. It's a touch and go situation, but I'm willing to do the work and stay plugged in to be that mother and that parent that I need to be. You know, I'm not going to give up what it is God has given me, you know, which is the program of Narcotics Anonymous and the gifts that it offers, you know. I know I'm going to keep coming back, and for the newcomer, you need to keep coming back, because things will happen for you. They start out slow, but they mature and accelerate, and you can get what you need from here, from any and everybody. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.